We're just syncing up the audios. Yeah. All right. So nice to be here. My name is Angela Zussman, and we're here with Sally Rizzo at Old Kaloa Regenerative Farm. Today is Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. So if we can just start with you saying and spelling your name, please.
Sally Rizzo, S-A-L-L-Y-R-I-Z-Z-O.
All right, Sally, so tell us, how long have you been on this land? And if you want to just show us what's behind you.
Well, I've been here occupying, I guess you would say, this lease of 24 acres. Right now you're looking at 10-acre parcel, staring directly at the sugar mill. We got our chickens in the background and our next zones that we're getting ready to open up for production. So we've been here since February 2021. We signed the lease. It took a year to get everything cleared, the first 10 acres, and we've been in production since August of 2022. So, yeah.
And how did you come to acquire this land? I know it's a lease, but how did that come about?
When COVID happened, I stopped doing medical school. I have an environmental degree, a bachelor's in environmental science, and then I thought I wanted to pursue something that would be lucrative, like nursing or dental. So I started looking into that because it would only be a couple more years with my degree already. And then COVID happened and I rethought the medical industry altogether just because it was just such a scene, I guess you could say. And I originally came to Kauai to work at the West Side. They have a charter school that doesn't have a lunch program. And they needed help building school gardens to be able to integrate that food into the actual school system there. This is the children from Niihau that come over for appointments, or they're just transitioning to living on Kauai or the mainland. So it was a small charter school that needed help building up their local food system. So I came and I started working in that, and I couldn't make a living as a single mom here doing it. So I, like I said, I started tour guiding, and then I thought I was going to go to school for medical, and COVID happened, and I got told by my boyfriend that I've always loved the earth and connecting people to food, and that I should look at that again. And he said I should check out this program that my friend has been instructing for the past like 10 years on the island. It's called Go Farm Hawaii, and Go Farm Hawaii. It's just this initiative to propel people into farming and expose them to 6 months of hands-on and educational to try to get people farming, because we don't have enough people farming on the islands. There could be 10 more of me and it still wouldn't be competition, right? That's the beautiful part of it. So it's this program, it's like an incubator program. It exposes it to you, gives you a safe place to fail, but you do it for 6 months, you come together, and we have one site on Kauai, right behind the college, the community college. So I reached out to my friend and I was like, hey, you know, I don't want to kind of put in a pump in the brakes on the medical school stuff and would like to look at this farming program. He's like, oh, we just started our next cohort, but it's super competitive right now because once COVID happened, everyone was like looking at backyard farming and ways to be more sustainable. But he snuck me in and he's like, you know, I'm sneaking you in on like good word. You know, we already started, but my boss said if I feel like you're really going to show up and like give it your all, like that I could get you in. And he did that, and because there was that pressure to not let him down, I am a perfectionist in some ways and an overachiever anyways, so it just kind of propelled me to like really take the program seriously. So I was there every day, twice a day. This is in Lihue, I live in Kaloa. I started with a 16th of an acre, and I got to do their program where they tell you what to grow, how to grow it. You find 7 customers for, you know, X amount of weeks, and you sell a farm box to them. And so it's a certain style of farming, it's a CSA. It just gets you out there exposing yourself, marketing, getting customers, learning what to sell what for, what grows here, what doesn't, what you are interested in, and a safe place to fail. And I did that program, took it seriously, and at the end of it, I had a business plan. That's part of the program. So after 6 months, you present it in front of a board, and you either pass or fail. I passed, and then I felt confident enough to go approach Grow Farm. We had done a field trip to their farmer's market, and I met one of the ladies there, and I was really paying attention to her name and her information. I got it, you know, and you know, she did a tour of the farmer's market, and we kind of did an analysis of like, ooh, what's saturated, what could, you know, what's gonna sell or not sell here. And I made sure I got her information. And as soon as I graduated, within the same month, I went to her and she set up a meeting for me. I don't think the guy really wanted to answer my emails at first, but I'm persistent and I got him to sit down with me. And it was more of like an interview of who are you? What's your intention with the land? And, you know, because I did send my business plan, the whole PDF and everything, but they wanted to know, like, what are you going to do with this? Like, because I think they're under heat about a little bit of mismanagement, you know, some of the off the record. You know, there's like a vibe of like, oh, they just let it go to Halicoa and invasive species, fire ants, and like it's mismanaged. No one's using it. There's this huge need for small scale agriculture and no one can afford land. No one will lease the land. When you do get the land, it's exhausted. So there, he was kind of like, well, what do you want to do with it? Are you just going to put a shooting range and a couple cows like everyone else and drink beers on the weekend? Or, and like, no. And like, he just let me do what you're doing right now. And I just ranted about what I wanted to do and like what I had been doing and my experience. And he's like, okay. And it was like, whoa, okay. And he's just like, well, where do you want your farm? And I'm like, Claude, next to the sugar mill. And my boyfriend grew up here, you know, so it was kind of like we knew this was the zone we wanted to be. And he's like, ah. He's like, honestly, he's like, no one's really successfully farmed the way you're trying to farm out there. It's just been so exhausted that they have to go to a certain style. And I'm like, well, this is where we want to do it if we can make it work. We came out here about a month later. Is after we all had COVID and like it was like the height of COVID, right? I'm like on my deathbed, but I still would not miss the like the chance to come out here. And like we had no idea if this was flat or if this was like it was all overgrown. But we, you know, he said, Adam Killerman said this is a good spot, so you clear it, it's good. And I was like, we just went on a leap of faith and it just felt like it was supposed to happen. Like people don't get interviews with Grow Farm, you know, they don't, people like me. Right? I shouldn't say that, but you don't just get the opportunity to get 24 acres here. So it just feels like this is bigger than us. So as much as it is me showing up and doing the program and doing the next right indicated thing, I think it's just I'm on the path that I'm supposed to be on. And like as long as I don't get derailed, it's just working the way it's supposed to work.
So you presented, he asked you what your intention was for the land. What did you say?
Well, I explained to him my farm name was... Their intention and my intention, my farm name was Stay Small, Kauai Farm, right? So I never wanted to be more than an acre. I thought I could make it. And I know you can be successful on less than an acre here. Their intention is to have people who are willing to scale up and actually put a dent into the food system here. So I had to explain that even though my farm name indicates that I don't want to scale up, that's just because I never felt like I could. I felt like I was always going to be boxed into an acre because I started with the 16th and that program I did had an option to expand to an eighth of an acre, but that's it. So I couldn't really ever think bigger than that. I was like, but if I had the opportunity with 5+ acres, I would like to intensively farm a zone, build it up, and get the soil healthy where it can handle that without synthetic fertilizers and heavy cultivation with heavy machinery, and give it a rest and flip to another. So having more land just means that I can farm correctly because I can allow things to rest once I build it up and use it, rest it, have animals go through it. It's this regenerative model that is new to Kauai, and it's the hot new words. You know, it was organic, now it's regenerative, which is just farming in a way that leaves it better for the next generation. So it's like, I'm doing all this work. Yeah, it's going to help me, but really what it's going to do, it's going to leave the land farmable for my son. Because at this point right now, it's like there was no life when we got to it. So if I just kept farming the way that it's traditionally been farmed, when my son got it, there's no incentive for him to put that work in. You want some of that water? Yes. Yes. It's just Julian germs. Yes. Can you see me?
Yeah.
So, I guess, yes. Bringing it back, I guess my intention when I explained to him was to help, without shaming what's been done here and what has been allowed to be done here, bringing attention to the fact that it's exhausted and I'd like to help restore the land and build a blueprint that of what a productive, scalable farm can look like on Kauai that isn't harmful to the land, is actually regenerating it. I kind of, in a roundabout way, told them I'd like to help regenerate the land that's been exhausted and leave it better. After 10 years and you don't want to lease to me, you have land that's been farmed and used and brand new irrigation system in, all these things that are barriers for people will be integrated into the land already. And hopefully my kids want to take it over or someone wants to continue. But at least the blueprint's here.
What do you know about the history of this land and how has that contributed to your vision?
Well, my partner's stepfather worked here. he drove trucks. He wasn't like actively in the fields, but his family was. He's a Bukowski. And yeah, his stepfather died of cancer. You know, like a lot of people, folks did that worked in that industry, I feel like. They were exposed to different things and just had a different lifestyle. I know that the soil still has black plastic fluttering in it. That's called black butterfly. It's all over the islands. It's not unique to us. You know, that's just the conventional method was to till in your plastic. So when we go through, you can see the history. It's just got a deep scar of conventional agriculture. It's heavily tilled. It's compacted. I know there's synthetic fertilizer that's been used here through sugarcane industry. Then it was coffee. And there's a lot of pesticides and synthetic just chemicals that get put down on the ground, which burn up the life around it. And right down the road, there's still GMO corn. So there was corn here. I think it was for parent seed. So they're just trying to get a seed, right? They're not growing food for consumption. So you could put chemicals all around it as long as you're getting the seed you're looking for. Again, not trying to shame people. That's just the reality of it, that there might have been even more pesticide used here than other places because it was very well known they're not going to eat it and consume it. So it went from sugarcane to coffee to GMO corn. And then it sat fallow for 7 years and here we are. 7 to 10 years. I don't know the exact. So that's the history of the land, right? So it goes from as shallow as like you can pull out the drip tape that was just tilled in carelessly to there's just zones where nothing grows, right? It's like you have to import soil and compost and slowly bring back life and be patient because it's just been so degraded.
And you've called this ground zero.
I do. That right behind me, where our fence line is, that is the actual like dust cropping for the airplanes that would come through and throw all the chemicals and the pesticides out. So literally ground zero, which is why we get a lot of support and grants, because it is known and it's not a secret of how detrimental those products have been. I did do a soil test when we first got here because we were concerned, like, we're going to be breaking this soil open, like, we can't not till, we have to do some conventional agriculture to break into the soil. And when we do that, what are we releasing? What are we breathing in? What are our kids breathing in? That was a big concern of my partner. He was like, great, but also, like, I'm so excited that we are here, but there's a reason why no one's here type of thing, you know? So it was a little bit like, ooh. So I got it tested, and I was really nervous. I got a really expensive test done. They tested for, like, 292 of, like, the most prominent pesticides and chemicals. But what I found was there was no trace of those left, because the half-life of those chemicals is pretty short, meaning like they break down pretty quick, which is why you need to readily reapply them so much. So that's kind of the upside of that, and it's been so long and so fallow sitting here that it's like the ground has absorbed it and done its thing with it and broken it down, but now it's just kind of like a little, it's just fallow and exhausted, so.
So what, culturally speaking, you know, from your own background, what makes you feel connected to the land and its rejuvenation?
I want to be transparent, but I'm not from here. I'm from a place I don't even feel from, if that makes any sense. I feel, only reason why I feel like I'm from there is because I got to grow up barefoot and wild and interact with nature freely. Not be kind of told how to interact with it. Very little supervision, which is good. And I think a lot of people helicopter their kids in nature anymore if they do get to go in nature. So I in some ways had a really awesome childhood that I was able to interact with nature freely, but can't say I feel like I'm from anywhere, just being a child of the system, in foster care and all those things. So born New York, Queens, New York, about as city as you can get. I do not have many memories there. Grew up Pennsylvania, in the mountains, one stoplight, people riding their tractors to prom, all over, different schools, different families. So I don't know what my culture is, but I do know that anywhere I lived, I always had a garden. Anywhere I lived, I always had friends that we would go to the river and overturn stones and look what's underneath it, and water and rivers, not much here, and just experimenting in nature, like throwing down seeds, what's going to happen, letting a cat poop in there and seeing that the fertilizer, like things like that, like don't really happen anymore. Like just seeing like, oh, that's natural fertilizer, and oh, my stuff will grow better over here if it's in the shade. And I've always had somewhere to grow something. It just, I can't say my culture, I don't know what my culture is, and that I'm okay with that, but it allows me to come here and not be so strong in something. I can kind of just blend in a way of like, I'm just trying to do something that's everyone's culture, eating and food, and it's health and it's nutrition. Like, it shouldn't matter where I'm from or where I'm not from, in a way of like, to me, of I'm trying to make the land better and grow in a way that's going to feed people. That's my culture. I'm a child of the system.
Talk to us a little bit more about your vision in terms of making the produce that you grow available to all people.
Yeah, so that was a big thing. We live on the south side, right? So the market here is a little bit different on the north shore. It's a lot of more hippy-dippy farms, and they're going to the farmer's market. It's a scene. It's like McBillionaires with properties. It's health food stores. We just got our first health food store as of March, and they signed on with us to be their main farmer, which is huge. They're trying to empower the south side farm scene. It's just me and a bunch of Thai farmers, pretty much. Lucky for me, I guess, but I would say, what was the question again? So just so I'm on point.
Your vision about making food accessible to all.
So at first I was just like, who will take me and where can I get in, and like just building my customer base. And it was a lot of friends and it was a lot of restaurants, and it's like, great, I'm feeding tourists and some locals who can maybe afford to go out once here and there, and like they'll see my name on the menu. Like, cool. It's a cool way to get started, I guess. But it was really important for me to find outlets to push my food where EBT was accepted, because until March, when I started selling to Hoku, I have been on EBT my whole life, a child of the system, fully. And I'm 34 almost. So it was really important for me to be able to sell to people, local people who receive food stamps. I live in low income, and it's like 300 families there. They would come to my porch, and like before I had any store outlets, they would come to my porch who were interested in eating. I kind of put it out there on Instagram, like, hey, you know, like I live here, I grow this. If you're interested, I can sell eggs, blah, 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 for X amount weekly, pick it up from my lanai. And I had like 20 people doing that at a time. It got a little hectic, and now I just send them all to Hoku right down the road, and it's building their customer base, but also it's like, you're still buying my stuff and supporting me, and you can use your EBT. So that was, I was actually Hoku's first EBT customer. I made sure their stuff worked. It's important to me, because I was selling to places, I'm not trying to throw people under the bus, but it's geared toward tourists. The prices are extremely high. So it's like, Alex, I'm trying to do a thing, so doing this in the background. My phone die? You could charge it, probably in the car. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay, can you charge it in the car when the car's off?
No. So you just gotta go over there for right now. We're finishing up. Sorry, just chill in the shade. But there's a camera on, and we're doing voice record, so this is like a big hiccup. Thank you. I'll come get you, because I think they want to talk to you, too.
Yeah, in just a couple minutes.
Okay, so don't go too far. Sorry.
No.
Okay, so it's very important to me that I have outlets that accept EBT for low-income residents, because you don't have to be super low-income to still get EBT here, just because it's so... the space between people who can afford to live here and who can't, who are actually here, I mean, I don't have to say it, it's unreal. So yeah, that's huge to me. Selling to places that are geared just to tourists or to the McMillionaires that live right across the street here, it's like cool, But that doesn't sit well with me. I want my food to be accessible to everyone. And my eggs and all these things, I'm trying to work it to where I'm selling at a price that people can actually, like, look at and, like, be like, okay, I'll support them. I could get more for my stuff. Especially being a regenerative farm, it takes more to get the product, but I'm kind of finding that number that I can get by on and they can still afford. So Hoku's really good about that. They gave me like a dollar more than I was asking for everything because they were honest and like, no, we could do this. You know, what do you want? We could do this. And everything was higher. And that was the first time I worked with someone that I felt like, wow, they're really honoring that part of like, I want this to be affordable. You know, I'm not, because I could charge more, and eventually will, because it's just inflation, but I don't know. It's important to me that local people eat my food.
Well, that also came up a lot during COVID, right? When there was suddenly this resurgence of awareness mm-hmm. that there's a food scarcity issue here on the island, that we're not self-sustainable, but we could be. Mm-hmm. How does your vision play into that? As far as island-wide and what the island actually needs to sustain itself.
Yeah, I mean, when I think local, there's like, oh, this is local. It's like, it could be from Oahu and still be termed local. So, like, just kind of dialing in on that. Like, I only service the south side right now because I'm one person and I'm just getting started. I'm like, at this point, I'm like, I don't have a delivery vehicle. To be able to do island-wide means you have, or like Kauai, you literally have infrastructure that allows you to harvest days before. So that means you have an off-grid cold storage. That's a huge luxury. That means that you have power, which we just got through a grant, through the Go Farm grant, a matching grant for $50,000, and it just all got used up. That's just to put solar in, to convert a matzah container into an ice box, because it's hot out here. You start harvesting large amounts of things like greens, it starts going bad, and you need to cut it, harvest it, wash it, and move it all within the same day. So that means you need a team. That means you need infrastructure because you are going to start that work 1 or 2 days ahead of time just so you can move it properly. It's a whole thing to be able to scale up to that. So all these small farms that are like an acre or whatever, it's like they're only able to feed, I would say, a handful of customers. Hopefully those are like a couple of them are markets or grocery stores, but the entry into a grocery store, you have to have all these qualifications. So that keeps people out as well. So to be able to get on a scale where you're able to really impact the island, I'm learning about. And that's why I'm putting in infrastructure to be able to get there because it's not that easy. You also need a workforce. How many people can complain on this island that they don't have enough workers, right? So then I'm supposed to tell them come to a farm and work, right? And I'm not going to give you housing on top of that, and you're going to make X amount an hour and you're going to work really hard. It's just there's not a lot of people that want to get into farming right now. I think a lot of people idealize it and want to volunteer, but to be consistent and show up and do it. So there's the workforce, there's the infrastructure you need, and then the market. It's hard to get into there and sustain that. I'm not sure, but I do feel like what needs to happen is there needs to be a lot of small farms instead of a couple big farms trying to take over. A lot of small farms filling in the gaps. There's farmers markets. I'm not even looking at those. I have no interest in farmer markets at this point. There's markets, grocery stores, and then there's restaurants. And those are kind of our three or four things. So get started here. You kind of have to do a mix of things. It may not be exactly what you want. What I'm realizing is, I don't know, I feel like, you know, you get into farming and it's just like altruistic, like it feels good, you're going to feed everyone, but it's like, you got to be sustainable. So you got to take the restaurants. You got to take the bougie places that are selling to tourists. You got to do a mix of things to get started, and kind of like Robin Hood. You can't be stealing from the rich and giving to the poor right away, and you can't be taking from tourists and giving to locals right away. It's like got to be a blend, and you got to build up. And then gradually you'll be able to have a real impact on the island. But I do feel like there needs to be like 3,000 more of me just on Kauai. It's hard for me to get things in. They're not available on island, fertilizers and stuff, because there's not a demand from small farmers for it, right? So these big seed companies and stuff, they're the only reason why we have these, like, I can go to certain places in Puhi and get things for the farm. Otherwise, there's no justification for these places to be around because the farming industry is so small here. in comparison to other islands. It just doesn't warrant the need to bring in pallets of this and pallets of that. So then it's on me now to go to, like, call places in Oahu and get it shipped in. It's more expensive. So there's all these barriers that keep it from happening, these small farmers. But what I think is we need small farms, many of them doing their part, finding their little niche. I don't think it's a one band-aid fits all solution by any means. And I don't think we can be like, no, I'm not going to do farmers markets, or I'm only going to do this. I think it has to be a blend to reach the full community here. Otherwise, you're cutting yourself off. And that's kind of what the problem is here, is that we're at any moment can be cut off.
Speaking of cutting off, let's talk about water. You know, water management has been a big part of this conversation throughout this whole project. Talk to me about the water on your farm. Where does it come from? And to your knowledge, is it connected to the Owai system that was constructed by the Hawaiians centuries ago and perhaps enlarged or maintained by the plantations?
A lot of our water is still intact from the old system that was in place for the sugar mill. At least that's what Adam tells me, right? Adam's the guy, you just pick his brain. But he has told me that it was rerouted at one point. So the water all comes from a reservoir, I believe, over there. And it's all piped up and it got rerouted to the top of this hill. There's a hill behind us. And it's gravity fed down to me. And I'm on a water line with many other people. So if there's a break in it, and it's an old system, my water gets turned off for days. Generally, Adam fixes it pretty quickly, but it's old, it's outdated, it's a little, it's all ditch water. None of it's fresh, so we had to pay to get a system in place that would allow us to have clean water to actually wash vegetables here. That was a big infrastructure obstacle we had as well, beyond all the other things. But the pressure is great. It's never like we don't have water, as long as they're not fixing something. We have enough. We have enough pressure. And it's an old system that I think it's pretty cool that it's still like, it's kind of like alligators or something. Like, they haven't needed to evolve because they're just genetically, they're so like top. It's like we haven't really needed to change this because it was engineered so well. I think that's pretty cool, because how old is it now? Beginning of 1900s. I think that's pretty cool. Mismanagement, I don't know enough to talk about that. I don't feel comfortable talking about grow farms' mismanagement of water or property. I just know that's a common thing that gets brought up when I explain to people that I'm farming on grow farm land. You know, some people are like, and I know that they are sensitive to that and are trying to change their image, and that's part of the reason why we're here. It's kind of like their poster child farm, to show that, like, look, we're not mismanaging the land. We have small scale farmers coming in, farming the right way, you know, trying to be smart with water, XYZ. So I'm not sure too much on that.
Okay, but you've got the water and you're putting in a new irrigation system. So yes, you're actually increasing the infrastructure on this plot of land, even though you've only got a 10-year lease.
10-year lease, yes.
And so how does that feed into your long-term vision?
Well, regeneratively, if I'm going to be a true regenerative farm and I'm going to actually give zones a rest and not farm them to exhaustion, I need to open up new zones, which means I need to plumb water to them. Because it's so dry and hot out here that if I don't get water to where I plan to grow, nothing's going to grow. Oh, we got some folks coming. So it's a big investment, and I'm just going on good faith that, you know, this is where we're supposed to be. That's why we're putting all this in, and I can't farm without it. Water's life, you know, so I'll be stuck to one zone, and I can't do that.
Tell us the story of, you know, you've put so much work into this land. So how do you know that it's having a positive impact? How do you know that it's actually working?
You know, in the first trial phase of it, I didn't, and I still have my entrepreneurial doubt, how to say that. You know, like, is this good? Am I doing it? But I am working with called the Soil Carbon Initiative. So they're a third-party system backed by Green America, and it's this initiative. They took on 100 farms across America nationwide, and we were the one farm picked in Hawaii to represent them. And through them, we get access to the soil scientists that particularly focus on regenerative practices. So they take a baseline of your farm, and you see where you are before you start whatever you're planning to do. And they take your metrics, and then you build a plan with them regeneratively using all these different practices. And you say, after they come back and they keep testing your soil to see how it's changed over the coming X amount of time, saying you're doing this. So it's thought that in the next 3 to 5 years, we'll be able to look back and be like, hey, we started with this, and we've done XYZ, and we've kept record of it, and this is how we've seen your soil change over time, and now you are third-party verified to be a regenerative farm because you have brought this much life back to the soil and this much more carbon, nitrogen, blah, blah, blah. So, on a scientific level, I'm actually working with someone that's funding that science for me to show, they have done all of this over the past 3 years, and they started with this, and now they have this. And that I can put a stamp on my stuff and say it's regeneratively grown, which on a marketing thing, it sounds great, but on a integrity level, it's no, I'm not just saying I'm farming a certain way. It is. So there's that part of it that's I'm actually working with a company to make sure that I'm farming the right way and that I am actually leaving it better. But I think worms is a biological indicator, roly-polies, all these things that were not in the soil. you start bringing horse manure in, you start layering with cardboard, you start adding organic matter in there, you start cover cropping, you start giving things a rest, you start providing shade and structures and not just monocropping. I think the soil appreciates that, and I've seen the change in the life in the soil already. I've seen the quality of my product go up, and now I'm starting to see it go down because it's time to rest it, which is why I'm spending the money to expand it, So it's I'm learning as well. So I'm not a soil scientist. I can't prove at this moment, but I'm working with people that can prove for me that I am actually making a difference and that we are actually doing what we're saying we're doing. So there's an integrity to it that we're trying to uphold.
And you've probably already answered this, but just to ask it in another way, what gets you up every day out here?
Oh my gosh.
I know, again, it's hard work and you put in long days.
Oh my
gosh. So what is it that gets you out here?
Well, at first I was just oh my gosh, yay. And then it's oh, now we're farming. We're really farming. Things are attacking this. This isn't doing so well. This needs to go in. I'm one person. I have 2 kids. Now it's summer break. Holy crap. My boyfriend has a whole other job and entrepreneur thing. Workshops. It is a labor of passion. Passion of labor. I'm not sure what it is. It's definitely, I'm passionate about it. I like actually farming. I don't like the infrastructure that I'm putting, that process of dealing with this company and these people and getting this in and trying to find this part and trying to source this and the coordination of getting teams out here to put in water, to build greenhouses, to put in a cold storage, to put my solar panels in. It's just too much. Put my fencing in. We're trying to take on as much as we can, but I only know so much, and farming requires you to be so well-rounded, and there's so many limited teams on Kauai of people. It's amateur professionals, I'm told. And I am an amateur professional farmer, so I fit right in there. Kind of just building the bike as we ride it, and I feel like I've been learning to ride a bike as I build it at the same time. So it's just whoa. It's taken a lot from me. I had to stop pursuing a lot of other things. I'm an extreme athlete. I ultra trail run, CrossFit very intensely. I'm a competitive athlete my whole life, in the way of just pushing myself. And I have not done anything in 7 months because I said, once we got the ground to a point where I felt like I could farm it, I'm going to put all that energy I would put into running up mountains into here. And it's got me to a point where we now have 3 helpers and I can take a break. And yesterday was the first day I went to a kickboxing class in 7 months. Yes. So I'm starting to get out of this head down in the trenches. I just have to be here 80 hours a week and just suck it up, have my children, not have my children. And now Tuesdays I get to spend with my kids, and I have 3 helpers to help me on the days that I'm harvesting and delivering. I'm about to hire another person to help me build out the greenhouses. Things are starting to come in, but for the past year and a half, getting this place to where it needed to be, it was a lot of passion at first, and then that kind of just naturally drained out. It was a lot of like remembering what this is for, like push through, because it's only going to be this hard for so long, and then it's just not sustainable. And I can't farm if I'm not sustaining myself. So to prevent farmer burnout, I've been writing a lot of grants to help get all this infrastructure in. So it's like, I knew that if I could just push through, I get to this other side where I'm finally getting to. So it was a lot of passion that propelled me. And then it was just a lot of grit. And it's going to take a lot more grit to just keep going for the next 10 years. Because I know of my lease. That's why I say 10 years. I know farming is the hardest thing in the world, I think, next to being a mother. Just in general, I think those are very similar and very hard. You can be passionate, but eventually you're going to hit a wall. So it's a lot of balance of trying to figure out what I can get away with and what I need to do, and trying to delegate and be smart about like taking in the right people that have also a passion for the land and understanding what needs to be done and why we're doing it a certain way. Like, yes, we could just go through with a tractor and get it done. I get that. We're trying to avoid that. Like, so we put a little bit more sweat and a little bit more hours in so the land isn't getting what it's been historically getting. So I just got to remind myself what has happened here in the past and why we're doing a certain way and why I'm not going to cheat and take these shortcuts, even though I'm exhausted and I'm tired and I'm cranky and I'm hungry and thirsty. Like, doesn't matter. Like, so is the land. Like, she's thirsty and hungry and tired. Like, so it's good. It's like I've felt how I feel like a little bit of what this land has felt for the past like year of just like giving it everything. Every inch of me, every inch, every fiber of my being I've put into here, and it's finally working. I wouldn't say it's like it had to take that or multiple people, but I'm one person, right? So I stepped away from everything to put everything into here, and I'm finally like checking back into things and into myself. And I don't know if I'd recommend it for everyone. I think you gotta have a lot of passion and then a lot of grit.
Maybe a little bit too soon to say, but everything you've been through the last year, year and a half of pouring every single, mm-hmm. Speck of yourself into this work, how has it benefited you as a person? What have you learned or gained from that?
I've always been pretty confident, but I feel like now I have like a, well, it's not, if I can get through this and I can do it successfully, I feel like I can do just about anything. So there's like a little bit of like, okay, like, this is one of those things, like if you don't give up and you just keep doing it and you keep showing up and you keep learning from whatever you did wrong the first time, I just feel a lot wiser. I have someone that's going to consult with me that's starting farming because they came here and they're like, wow, you're doing this? I can do this. Like, can I consult with you? And like, I would have never said yes like a couple months ago because I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, and I still don't feel like I have that much to offer. But the bridge between me and the next person that wants to take on farming or even look at it, which is so crucial, like we're just saying, like we need more small farmers, for them to look at something that's 24 acres and be like, ooh, I was thinking about it, but like, it's like now it's like more realistic for people. There's like this tangible blueprint that they can come to me for. And that's what this is about. The Go Farmers that are in the next cohort, they're going to come here in July and they're going to be like, see what a Go Farmer has successfully done in the last 2 years after graduating. Like, here, you could do this and you can approach these people and here's a blueprint. Here's what you do and don't do. I figured that out for you, like there is no blueprint. So I'm like, it is kind of taking on that like Kuleana of like, we're going to figure out this, and there's no giving it up because people are looking at you from multiple places. And I do have people coming to be like, hey, I'm ready to like pursue farming. Can we talk and you help set me up? And I'm like, I can tell you what I know. I don't know how helpful it's going to be, but I can give you what I know at this point. But I hope by putting all myself into this, that there is a tangible blueprint to hand someone who's interested in farming in the next 5-10 years.
So we're going to see if we can speak with your son in a second, but don't go anywhere. Okay. Is it okay if Ela invites him to come over and speak with us for a moment? Yes. Okay. And then meanwhile, I'm going to ask you another.
Alex.
Yeah. Another question.
If he says no, just keep working him. He's just shy.
Tell him we want him to tell the earthworm story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, earthworms.
You're going to talk about earthworms. So what do you, I know that part of your vision too is that you can bring young people here.
Yes,
to the farm.
Yes.
So talk to me about that part of your vision and what inspires you about that and what are you actually going to do?
Yeah, so we started off before it was like actually a farm and we were building it out. We had lots of youth groups come out and schools and just kind of be like, hey, you know, we're doing this initiative. We're going to try to take on this land and heal it and bring it back to life. And it was a lot of just talking about what is regenerative agriculture, like what's the difference between that and conventional, why we should do it, how you do it, and just getting them to touch the earth and see and kind of be a part of coming here and planting the first trees and all that. And over the years, keep bringing out the same groups as they get older to see the transition. I think that's powerful and important. They have some tangible connection to the land, hands-on. It's important for us to bring out children because if they aren't interested in it, it's not going to continue. And I realize that. I'm 33 and I'm considered a young farmer. The age of today's farmers is 60 plus, right? So they're kind of aging out and they can't get out and people can't get in, right? So there's all these barriers to get in and there's all these barriers for farmers to get out. So it's kind of like we need to make it sexy and appealing and just actually possible for the future to really be able to farm. So if you show them that, yes, it is hard and yes, you can actually make a living and it's the best living you ever thought of, and I think if you plant those seeds early with them, it sticks. And with my son, I'm hoping that, you know, he is a part of this. He helped me plant the first things. He harvested the very first harvest. So, you know, he's a part of jiu-jitsu school that's right down the road that my partner operates. And to bring youth from there, a majority of them are lower income, and to show them, like, hey, there's food growing around you on the south side. You don't have to go to the North Shore to get it. You don't have to go to Costco. Like, there's farmers around you, and this is what a farm could look like, and there's animals, and, like, just get them stoked on it and what's growing near them within 5 miles. It's huge, just the exposure of it. Kids naturally want to be outside. They want to have they want to dig up the carrot and see what color it's going to be. Like, that is the most fascinating thing to them. And it's important that they know carrots grow in the ground, you know, and it's okay. You wash it off and you can bite right into it. My 2-year-old knows that. And it's so cool to have her go and show adults where the carrots are and how to get them out. And it's just, you know, it's frustrating having children out here in some ways on a farm. I was always told, you don't want kids on a farm. Like, it's work. It's a business. Like, you know, they could get hurt, blah, blah, blah. But I do believe there's space for it. And if you can successfully create space for learning and gathering and coming together, I think it just multiplies the impact of a farm on, like, bringing the community into it, and particularly youth and their families. It's just, your impact is so much greater and it's lasting. It's a, like, it's almost like it's legendary, you know. It's like it lives through you to the kids. It's not just this instant gratification farming that's just hurry up and make money and get it going. It's like, no, we're going to share this. We're going to share this knowledge. We're going to share this land. We're going to share the story. We're going to share the history together. So they're a part of it from the beginning. So we've brought out kids as young as like 3 to 5 groups to when we had Kenyan, that was like 40 plus kids, right? So, and then we do jiu-jitsu kids here often. So they, you know, they've helped with animals from when they were babies to now they're laying eggs and they get to go and gather the eggs. This is full circle. So it's just really important that we connect the kids to here as much as we get connected.
And how does that play into the Hawaiian tradition of malama, malama la'aina?
Yeah.
Take care of. What does that mean to you? How do you see that yourself contributing to that?
Again, like, I try not to push. Oh, is he coming?
He was. Where'd he go?
I think caring for the land is just like food. You know, that's our bridge, our common ground. Every culture has some aspect of that, I feel like. And I feel like I might not say malama the aina. I personally may not say that, but the way I communicate that is through regenerative agriculture. The way that we talk about it here is like we're trying to bring life back to this land because this land sustains us. And if we love the land, it's going to love us back. And that's like my way of kind of that whole concept of malama the aina is regenerative agriculture. My way of touching that is bringing attention to regenerative agriculture, because that's my connection to it. So I feel like authentic in my way of saying it that way. Otherwise, I feel like I might be saying something incorrectly or culturally inappropriate or whatever. And I'm not even gonna try to be something I'm not. So for me, regenerative farming feels really good. It makes a lot of sense, and it's a way we can respect nature together in a way that I understand fully. So that's good.
Amazing. And now we have Alex.
No, Alex, I need you to be a little serious, sweetie, okay? They just want to talk about that.
Okay.
Remember that story? Come here.
The worms?
Yeah, just come here. Use big words and take it seriously.
So now we're going to have Sally's son joining us. And his name is Alex.
Fine.
Yeah? Okay. And Alex, how old are you?
10.
You're 10 years old. Okay. What kind of stuff do you do here on the farm?
Work.
Yeah, no. Tell him, what did we do today?
So we moved.
You can look at the camera, sweetie.
It's okay, you can just look at me.
We moved weed mat onto beds that we needed to give them a rest because we used them too much and they're too hard. Mm-hmm. We cut holes for kale before we tilled the bed. Mm-hmm. And then
what did we do yesterday? Did we amend a bed?
Yeah, we amended. We cleared a row of arugula, amended it with chicken manure and alfalfa and tilthered it.
What's a tilther?
A tilther is like a tiller, but only 6 inches into the ground. And then,
why is that important? Just real quick, why is a tilther important?
Because if we tilled the bed, it would disturb all the life below 6 feet.
6 inches.
So what's one of your favorite memories? You've been working really hard on this farm for some time, and Mom has too. So tell us one of your favorite moments of farming here.
The first day here.
Tell me about it.
Because I always, they kept on telling me to climb up on trees. I'm like, why are you telling me to do this? They say like, which way are we supposed to be going? Because we're like, it was like, it literally looked like back there. And, like, we couldn't see a thing through it.
Just weeds, huh? And huge trees.
Yeah.
Hollycola,
yeah. And then,
so where was the tree? Wasn't it, like, right here?
Yeah. It was right here.
There was one tree growing. One actual tree. And Alex would find his way to there and be able to tell us where we were from there based upon where the sugar mill was, because we were just so overgrown we had no idea. So he would climb up it and be our, like,
it's right. Okay for you to come.
Okay, yeah, over. yeah,
that's fine. Okay, perfect. So you climbed up on the tree on that first day. Yeah. And how did you feel?
I actually don't remember.
But it was something that you remember as being a really fond memory. What's another fond memory from the farm? When could you see that some of your hard work was starting to actually pay off?
When our first bed that we ever made actually had worms.
Tell us that story.
So my mom was talking to me because we were like doing something with the bed, like planting something.
Olena, where are we putting
Olena? Yeah, we were putting Olena in the bed. And then she's like, she was like talking to herself, like, if I was like a worm, I would want to live here because the soil was really nice. And then she just starts digging up holes for the Olena. And then she's like, mouth open. I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, and then she shows me the worms. I'm like, your prophecy came true.
Yep. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, and so why is that a big deal to have worms? Were there worms when you first got here?
Nope.
Why not?
Not a single one. The ground, the soil was not good.
What do you mean not good?
Like, wasn't healthy, didn't have, like, good nutrients in it.
Dusty.
Yeah, it actually was really dusty.
Yeah. So what would you want other kids to know? Maybe there's other kids like you, 10 years old around, maybe a little younger, maybe a little older. Maybe they've never been on a farm before. Maybe they might think, like, whoa, that's a lot of hard work. Like, why would you want to do that? What would you say to them?
To me, I would do this because it helps people get healthy food, not like people who just spray pesticides all over, and just like it's not very good because it just like has all those chemicals on it.
So it's important because you get nutritious food.
Mm-hmm. And how do you like being part of that, being able to make that food for other people?
Good. Happy I get to do something here.
I know your mom has a big vision for the farm. Do you have a vision for the farm? Where would you like, what would you like us to see?
I would just want every single spot here to just be trampolines, playgrounds.
And a little bit of garden.
And then a lot of garden.
Okay, so a nice mix between play and work.
Yeah.
Which we are. Alex is working summer break for...
A new trampoline, because this trampoline's got holes. I keep on falling off it when I do a front flip. I literally ate it earlier.
What do you want to grow out here? If you could grow anything out on this land, what would it
Green
be?
Green onion, dill, and cilantro.
Why?
Because they're my favorite.
You got good taste. Mm-hmm. Anything else that you guys want to say? There's going to be other kids and students watching this. There's going to be farmers watching this. There's going to be historians wanting to know about how this land is being taken care of. Either or both of you, is there anything else that you want to say about your experience being here on the land, taking care of the land, and looking forward to the future?
No, I'm good.
I think about it for a minute. I think that it's... What we're doing, I don't think we're heroes or anything like that in our brains. I feel like it's just something that needs to be done at this point. I think regenerative farming in a way that like thinks about future generations and leaving it better than what you found it is now a necessity. That's really, we're just doing what's actually necessary and we're just answering that call. I don't feel like it's anything less or more than that. Like this is what the land needs at this point. Like we've pushed it to this point. I think that farmers that aren't farming regeneratively but are very successful should consider integrating in regenerative practices. I wouldn't say we're 100% regenerative, but that is the goal, is to be fully a regenerative, profitable, scalable model for others to learn from and to open it up to the community. And I just think integrating community and not hiding what you're doing and sharing that knowledge and love is only going to help farming perpetuate and be more sustainable in the long run. And having kids be a part of it, as frustrating as it can be, it's just, this is the future. If he's not into it, it's just not going to happen, you know, and like that's scary. So having someone understand at age 10 what it takes to get land to a certain point and to plant a seed and see it all the way through and actually be interested in eating that carrot or green onion or dill, it's like, that's what it's about. This is what it's about. So to me, it's already successful because my kid wants to eat the food that he's helping grow here, right? Yeah. What would you say to kids that are thinking about farming or may not think that it's not for them? Why would you say that it's for someone farming? Why is farming for you?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Does it feel good to be out there? Building up the land?
How does it feel when you plant the seeds and then sometime later you come out and there's a carrot there or a pumpkin or... how does that feel?
Like accomplishment?
Feel accomplished? How's it feel when you bring your friends here? I never asked you that. Like, are you proud of this zone? Or like, he likes to show people how to broad fork and
it
do
it. Might not be the prettiest, but it's still good enough.
Oh, it's still good enough. We take good enough. I like that. Thank you.
By the way, it's pretty too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, my final question for you. If you wanted to say for both of you or either of you, if you wanted to offer a blessing to this land for what it's giving you and to future generations, what would your blessing be?
Think about it. I do talk to the land. I mean, I'm a spiritual person and I feel like there's an energy out here that needs to be respected and honored. So when I'm out there and I'm frustrated or I'm happy, I look up and I cry and I say thank you. And I just feel like we have an understanding that like, you'll keep me here as long as I keep doing the right thing. You brought me here because you knew I was going to do the right thing. And as long as I keep doing the right thing, you'll keep me here. Like, we just got this understanding, like, you got me, I got you type of thing. So my blessing would be that we just keep that understanding and we don't stray from it. and that I feel like Kauai in general will kick you out if it doesn't want you. And there's no difference on this being in the sacred zone back here, that if we start farming in a way that isn't respecting and honoring that we will be removed. So I think keeping that in my head, that like this is an honor to be back here, and that something greater than us allows us to be here, whatever that is. So just keeping in communication and looking up and being grateful. I try to every time we go through the gate in the morning be like, thank you for letting us be here. So I do realize like that this is a blessing. As far as that, it's just showing up every day and just doing the right thing. Like hopefully we just keep that understood contract together, that till my last breath I'm gonna try to do it right, and hopefully just stay here.
Alex, do you have anything you want to add?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
I don't know.
Anything you want to add?
I'm good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, both of you, and my blessings very much to you.
Aww.
The great work that you're doing, that you're contributing, as you said, to the sacred place. So much history, ancient history, modern history in these hills, the warriors who fought here, the people who cared for this land for so long, the wise ones, the Heiau, the sacred places, all of that contributing, all of that looking at you every single day. Like you said, the energy is still here.
Yeah, it's on. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Say thank you.
Thank you.
You know what time we have right now?
It's 1:07.
Okay, gotta get going.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.